So again, just take a few moments and let those mantras settle inside of you. You want to really feel the difference in the Torah. There's such a sense of opening and being propelled, moving through, being held as we move through the ocean of this world. And Kuan Yin is very different. It's such a deepening into that poignant space of the heart that in a way is forever broken. The beautiful broken heart. As long as there is suffering, there's Kuan Yin. To hear the cries, she who hears the cries of the world, and to take that suffering into herself, which is our self, so that we're not alone in it. And somehow in that meeting, suffering sweetens and transforms into wisdom, transforms into deepening compassion. So just rest a bit in the subtle interplay of those two vibrating fields inside of us. That which holds us and carries us through life, and that which is the broken heart of compassion. And if it's interesting and it's happening and you're in it, see if you can really touch your own broken heart. It's very good to have a broken heart. That's how we know we're human. That's how we know we're alive and feeling. My first meditation teacher was Purabhalaya Khan, and he would say, until the heart is broken, love can't flow through it. So true. Otherwise, everything gets caught and trapped in there. Broken heart's an open heart. Broken heart's a feeling heart. Broken heart's a heart that has endured and continued. So we're up to chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 6, the Yoga of Meditation. The Blessed Lord, which is Krishna, said, he who performs his duty with no concern for results is the true man of yoga, not he who refrains from action. This is another one of the core teaching of yoga, that we need to be in the present moment. We can't be caught up in external goals. We can't be caught up in the future or influenced by the past. We need to be in the present moment, and we need to work, we need to live from the deep impulse of our own being, and that being knows everything, and it doesn't need a goal. It is the goal, and it's our attachment to goals that creates suffering, because we think the goal is going to make us happy and it never does, or we don't reach it and then we're upset. So goals are problematic. We need goals in order to keep moving, but we can't be attached to those goals. Classic yoga. All right. No, so I'll give this one again. He who performs his duty with no concern for results is the true man of yoga, not he who refrains from action. So he's making the point very well, because especially at this point, some people thought they had to retire to the forest and not do anything, just live in a cave and just meditate all day. It's bogus. Doesn't work. So he's saying it's about performing your duty, being in the world, but not being caught up with results of your duty, doing your duty with as much you know, beauty and love and wonder and respect and compassion and presence as you can, but doing it from that, not to achieve. That is the true man of yoga, not he who refrains from action. Know that right action itself is renunciation, Arjuna. In the yoga of action, you first renounce your own selfish will. So profound. Know that right action itself is renunciation. It's not renouncing whatever, giving up meat or wheat or dairy or all the things people think they have to give up. And then they just secretly do them anyway. You know, it creates repression. That kind of renunciation creates repression. And he's saying, no, right action. That's renunciation. And again, it's renouncing what he's calling our own selfish will, your own selfish will. Well, that's a little heavy-handed, but it's renouncing that attachment to what we're doing. So we're just flowing with what is, rather than superimposing the sense of I am the doer, I am doing this. That's what this chapter is about. For the man who wishes to mature, the yoga of action is the path. For the man already mature, serenity is the path. I love that. So such a, again, I've said this every week, it's such a positive text. There's something for everyone. For the man who wishes to mature, the yoga of action is the path. So, simply keep practicing non-attachment. Keep giving up that sense of I am the doer. And really play with the possibility that the self is the doer and I'm serving that. For the man already mature, for the one that has an understanding, then serenity. Once you have that understanding, serenity is the path. Because once you have that understanding, then you really want to practice maintaining serenity no matter what is arising. Always being in that place of... there's no word for it. Serenity. Peace. Yeah. It's a practice. There's no permanent state. We have to keep working the program. When a man has become unattached to sense objects or to actions, renouncing his own selfish will, and by selfish, let's forget, you know, selfish, the definition, you know, you're selfish. It's the small self getting all bound up in will. Yeah? Is this clear? Okay. When a man has become unattached to sense objects or to actions, renouncing his own selfish will, then he is mature in yoga. He should lift up the self, small self, by the self, big ass. He should lift up the self by the self and not sink into the selfish. For the self is the only friend of the self and its only foe. For the self, small s self, is the only friend of the self, big s self, and its only foe. It's such, that's such a profound verse, because it's talking about, that's where it's really talking about attachment. And it's talking about the ego, the sense of I am. And he's saying, when I am is identifying with the big self, that's when it is being a friend to the self. I am the self. When the small self is saying, you know, I am a miserable person. You know, I am having a hard day. You know, I'm so depressed. I'm so upset. I'm so aggravated. I'm so fed up. I'm so whatever, all those I am limiting myself. That's when that small self becomes a foe of the self. It's a subtle shift in how we hold ourselves. It's a subtle shift in our inner stance. Doesn't mean we don't suffer, we don't feel hatred, we don't get angry, we don't go through all the human emotions, but we don't identify with those emotions. They're just, because in that broken heart, they're just moving through us. Just moving through us, moving through us, moving through us. There's no attachment. And so we don't get stuck in all these mind states, emotional states, that are so powerful in terms of just really dragging us down and creating all sorts of internal yuckiness. So that's what this verse is saying, and it's so simple and eloquent. He should lift up the self, small self, by the big self, and not sink into the selfish. And it's true, it's like lift up, you know, lifting up. What it's opening into the hugeness that the self is. It's huge. It's the huge presence inside of us. And it's opening into that, lifting into that, rising into that. And we sort of rise, but it's so big, it's down too, it's everywhere. But it's definitely a sense of lifting. And we are merged with that, the great self. And not sink into the selfish. And it is, when we go down, we go down. For the self, the small self, is the only friend of the self and its only foe. It's so beautiful, you know. It's just like, you're going to go this way or you're going to go this way. Your choice. We always have the choice. We can open or we can shut down. Open or shut down. The self is a friend for him who masters himself by the self. But for him who is not self-mastered, the self is the cruelest foe. It's playing really with words. Again, the small self is a friend for him who masters himself by the big self. In other words, the self is a friend to us when it allows itself to merge with the big self. Then everything's fine. But for him who is not self-mastered, the self becomes the cruelest foe. Because it's always creating drama. My infamous story of my green chair created so much goddamn drama. And it's only now that I've detached from the drama and I'm just in the process, it's fine. But when I was annoyed about what happened with the chair, I was very caught up in small self. Mm. I was a very cruel foe to my own sense of serenity, because I was all caught up in, I can't believe this, and it's not ready, and I had to drive to China. Ruined a whole day, because I didn't get the stupid chair that I was planning to get. It was absurd. But that was that Dharma talk, I think it's up on the blog from 2 weeks ago. It's a rather hilarious articulation of what this chapter is all about. Attachment to goals never works because they never happen. Because life is a mess and all the plans in the world fall apart. Once in a while we get lucky and everything goes well. But it's very rare. When a man has mastered himself, he is perfectly at ease in cold, in heat, in pleasure or pain, in honor or in disgrace. The mature man, fulfilled in wisdom, resolute, looks with equal detachment at a lump of clay, a rock, or a piece of pure gold. And it's so true. It's so true. When we really live from that place, that unity place, that self with a capital S place, we certainly are aware of difference, and we can certainly appreciate beauty, and how can I say, not bring not beauty into our space. But that's not done from a place of judgment. It's not done from that harsh sense of separation. You know, as we become beauty, beauty surrounds us. But we can't, like anything, be attached to that either. We have to be able to be so deeply connected within ourself that whatever is arising, we can be with it without going down the rabbit hole of poor me. You know, we're such poor me drama queens, and it doesn't work. We want to cultivate good company in the people that we spend our time with, in the work that we do, in the places that we spend our time in. But it's not always going to be perfect. And we need to be able to be comfortable with no matter what. And we can only do that when we keep practicing identification with the great self. Because the self, it's all one. It's the presence within us that sees life exactly as it is. We started late, and I don't want to talk too much, but I thought I would read a little from Baba Muktananda, who wrote so beautifully about the self. Here, for instance, he says, "What is the self? It is the pure awareness of I am, the original I consciousness, which has been within us ever since we came into this world." And again, it's just the I am. It's not the I am attached to something. I am a woman, I am a man, I am a blah, 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 blah. It's just that sense of I am. It's that sense of being alive and being an individual with consciousness. What is the self? It is the pure awareness of I am, the original I consciousness, which has been within us ever since we came into this world. Even though that I exists in a woman, it is not a woman. Even though it exists in a man, it is not a man. That I is without form, color, or any other attribute. We have superimposed different notions onto it. Notions like I am man, I am a woman, I am American. But when we wipe them all away, that I is nothing but pure consciousness. And it is the supreme truth. Perceiving that, the great Shankaracharya, one of the great sages of the yogic system, proclaimed, "Aham Brahmasmi, I am the Absolute." Perceiving that I, the great Sufi saint, Mansur Mastana, said, "Anal Haq," same thing, "I am that." It's that I is the source of this world. A banyan seed is tiny, and if you crack it open, you will find nothing inside. Yet that seed contains an entire tree with its roots, branches, and leaves. And that's a gigantic tree from the little teeny tiny seed. In the same way, the self is the seed which contains the whole universe. Everything is in the self. And therefore, when we know the self, we know everything that can be known. That is why the sages continually contemplate the self, meditate on the self, and lose themselves in the self. So there's a little Muktananda. So let's chant some more so that we can actually experience the self.